2016 has gotten quite a bad rap. It is not remembered well, even though it's just barely in the past. Actually, one of my favorite little stories about that takes place a couple hundred years in the future in a history classroom orbiting Mars. And the history teacher is finishing up the discussion of December 2015. Says, all right, class, now we're going to jump to January of 2017. And one student raises their hand and says, but what about 2016? And the teacher's face gets dark and says just above a whisper, we don't talk about 2016. You know, it's an easy joke to make. It's kind of a fun joke to make. We thought 2016 was so bad, we actually anthropomorphized it and made it seem like it was out to get us personally. At least if that's what the internet says. But the jokes are fun, and the jokes are there, and the jokes are all well and good. But the fact of the matter is that this past year was probably a very difficult year, at least at various times, for every single person in this congregation. Now, 2017 is supposed to be this nice, awesome, hard reset. Every single time we get to January 1st, we wipe our minds clean. We're going to start over. It's going to be fresh. It's going to be better. It's going to be new. It's going to be different. And sometimes it only takes 2 weeks before you realize life is still hard. That life is still difficult. That there's still pain. There's still struggle. So what do we do in the face of hurt? What do we do in the face of confusion? What do we do when we don't really know what steps to take next? The recipients of the book of Hebrews would have been able to relate to that feeling, would have been able to relate to that question. The book of Hebrews is really one long sermon pleading with its readers to hold fast to the faith, because Jesus Christ is superior to everything else. The text we're going to look at today is obviously no exception to that. We already read it this morning in your order of worship, Hebrews chapter 4, the final verses of Hebrews chapter 4. Now, the book of Hebrews is interesting because we don't get a very specific look at who the author is. We don't get a detailed look at necessarily who the recipients were, so it's hard to date. It's hard to necessarily figure out some of the specifics around the events going on in Hebrews. But we do know this, that the original readers of the book of Hebrews were those who were of the household of faith. And they had proven themselves faithful before. If you actually look in chapter 10, you see the author referencing a time when they had been able to withstand difficulty and trial and come out the other side faithfully. He mentions that they were persecuted through tauntings and public shamings. Some of them had even had their possessions taken, and he commended them for their faithfulness during that time. Now, we don't know necessarily what those readers would have been going through now at this time, but whatever it was heavier. It was worse. And these people were in danger of giving up. You know, some scholars think that this might have been right around the time that Nero would have been in charge of Rome. And if you know anything about church history or Roman history, you know that's not good for you as a Christ follower to be living under the era of Nero. So whether it was actually that purge of Nero or not, these were believers who were hurting. People like us who were confused, who were lost, who didn't know if they had the strength to carry on. And right from the outset, the author of Hebrews points to Jesus as the hope, points to Jesus as our foundation, Jesus as our reason to keep running. This message this morning is going to be very simple. I think that's probably about the only kind of message I'm capable of bringing. But the truth behind it is unfathomably rich. So hopefully as we look at this morning, we will all be encouraged as we look to Jesus Christ. Let's read the passage again. Hebrews 4, verses 14, 15, and 16. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to the confession, that is, our confession of faith. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tested in every way as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us approach the throne of grace with boldness, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help at the proper time. The author of Hebrews sets forth Jesus, and specifically in these verses, and it really is not just in these verses, but all throughout the entire book, specifically Jesus in his role as our high priest, as our reason for hope and our reason for confidence, our reason for endurance. So this morning, we're going to look at Jesus as our high priest. Now, the initial readership of Hebrews, people who had been part of the Old Covenant, the law of Moses had been their way of life. Their Old Covenant way of living would have been very ingrained in their mindset. They would understand immediately their need of a priest. But we need to make sure that we understand why we actually must have a high priest. So first I want to look at our need for a high priest. Our need for a high priest this morning. You know, ever since at Sinai, when God had implemented this covenant with the nation of Israel, you'd see two major offices that were held throughout the nation of Israel that were given incredible respect and incredible power. You had the office of the prophet, and they had the office of the priest. Now, the job of the prophet was to bring God down to the people, as it were. To bring God down to the people, to communicate with people what God has said. And the job of a priest was actually to bring those people before God. Our mediator. The person who speaks on our behalf to God the Father Almighty. You see, from the very beginning, from the Garden of Eden, we have had a problem. And the problem is that we are locked here in our sin, and God is locked there in his holiness. And we cannot get closer to him, and he cannot abide to have his purity tainted by our sin. So we don't have the option of just running to God. We need someone to go between. And that was what the office of the high priest was intended to do. The office of the high priest was there to implement and to carry out the sacrificial system that God set up in place for the covering of sins. Hebrews 10:22 tells us that without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. One of the main responsibilities of these earthly priests was to carry out those duties for the sake of the people. We actually read this morning as well, but the first few verses of Hebrews chapter 5 explain a little bit of what an earthly priest, what his qualifications were, what he was intended to do, and where he served. Hebrews 5 says, "For every high priest taken from among men is appointed in service to God for the people to offer both gifts and sacrifices for sin. He is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and are going astray, because he himself is also subject to weaknesses. Because of this, he must make a sin offering for himself as well as for the people." That little phrase there at the end kind of starts to give the indication that this priestly system, this covenant set up by God, though good, was far from perfect. Because even the earthly high priest had to sacrifice sins, had to sacrifice an animal on his own behalf to cover his sins before he could even work on the people's behalf. We've needed a high priest since we separated ourselves from God. But we need a better high priest than any person could give us. We need a better priesthood than has ever been implemented throughout Israel's history. And we start to see that as we look through the book of Hebrews. You can stay in chapter 4. I'll be reading multiple different passages as we kind of go through this morning. But we start to see that though the priesthood is good and God used it to accomplish his purposes, it was lacking. We see in chapter 7, verse 23, it says, "Now many have become Levitical priests since they are prevented by death from remaining in office." I've always found that a unique way to say that. There has been a long line of priests in the line of Aaron, because there had to be, because the previous priest kept dying. That in and of itself is a problem. We read this in chapter 10, the first four verses. "Since the law has only a shadow of the good things to come, and not the actual form of those realities, it's a shadow It's an image. It's a picture. It's not complete. It can never perfect the worshipers by the same sacrifices they continually offer year after year. Otherwise, wouldn't they have stopped being offered? Since the worshipers, once purified, would no longer have any consciousness of sins, but in these sacrifices, there is a reminder of sins every year, for it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sin. We needed a better priest. And the Son of God came to be that priest. You know, we're just on the other side of the Christmas season when we take time to relish and think about the incarnation of God. And this is such a ridiculous thing for me to try to wrap my mind around. But prior to the Son of God being born in human flesh, he was actually not equipped yet to be our high priest. He wasn't lacking in his deity. But if a high priest is one who must offer a sacrifice, if a high priest is one who has to be able to relate to the people he's bringing before God, well, God became man. He became human for us. And so I want to look at the work of him as our great high priest. We needed a better priesthood, and thankfully we have one here this morning. And this is what is set up as our encouragement, as our hope, as our motivation to keep running this morning: Jesus Christ as our high priest. Let's read the first couple of verses again in Hebrews 4. It says, "We have a high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God. Because of this, let us hold fast to the confession. For we do not have a high priest who was unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tested in every way as we are, yet without sin." First, I want us to see in the work of Christ as our high priest that he offered himself as our perfect sacrifice. He offered himself as our perfect sacrifice. And it's so easy, at least for me, maybe you do a better job of this, but it's so easy to think about Jesus being the spotless lamb, the perfect sacrifice, and all we ever think about is his death. And that's not to minimize the death. We needed a spotless sacrifice in our behalf to take away sins. But if all we needed was a spotless lamb to die, Jesus was spotless right after his birth. We needed more than a substitutionary death attributed to our account. We needed a perfect life of obedience attributed to our account. And Jesus, our high priest, dealt with all the difficulties and trials and pain and struggle of this world, and yet did all of that without sin. This is another... Hebrews is full of just mind-blowing verses. Let me encourage you, read Hebrews this week. Go through and read Hebrews and just sit in wonder at some of these statements about Jesus Christ, our salvation. But in chapter 5, verses 8 and 9, we read this about the Son of God. Though he was God's Son, perfect, eternal, all-knowing, all-powerful, he learned obedience through what he suffered. The Son of God learned in a new way what it was to submit and what it was to obey. And then verse 9 says, "And after he was perfected, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him." He lived a perfect life of obedience on our behalf. And it is that perfect life of obedience that allowed him to be finally that perfect sacrifice for us. In his work as our perfect sacrifice, he lived the perfect life of obedience, but he also died as the perfect substitute. He died as the perfect substitute. Now this next part here, I'm just going to read a bunch of passages, short texts from the book of Hebrews, describing how Jesus is better in every single way than this the earthly priesthood that had been in existence. As I looked at it, as I studied, I realized I'm not going to be able to say this any better than the Holy Spirit did and than the author of Hebrews did. And I understand when we start reading, it's easy to check out. And I understand it's easy because I'm that way. So if you want to, you can follow along by turning in the verses in your Bible. But otherwise, just sit and soak this in, recognizing who Jesus is and what he has done and how he has accomplished a more perfect sacrifice. Hebrews 7, 23 and 24 says this. Now many have become Levitical priests since they are prevented by death from remaining in office, but he remains forever and he holds his priesthood permanently. Hebrews 8, 5 says that these serve as a copy and a shadow of the heavenly things. That's talking about the earthly tabernacle and the system of sacrifice. These serve as a copy and shadow of the heavenly things, as Moses was warned when he was about to complete the tabernacle. For God said, be careful that you make everything according to the pattern that was shown you on the mountain. And in chapter 9, verses 7 and 8, but the high priest alone enters into that second room, the Holy of Holies, the very presence of God. Only the high priest enters into that second room, and he does it only once a year and never without blood, which he offers for himself and for the sins of the people committed in ignorance. The Holy Spirit was making it clear that the way into the most holy place had not yet been disclosed while the first tabernacle was standing. And then in chapter 9, verses 23 through 26, we read, therefore, it was necessary for the copies of the things in the heavens, the earthly tabernacle and the system of sacrifice, to be purified with these sacrifices, but the heavenly things themselves to be purified with better sacrifices than these. For the Messiah did not enter a sanctuary made with hands, only a model of the true one, but into heaven itself so that he might now appear in the presence of God for us. He did not do this to offer himself many times, as the high priest enters into the sanctuary yearly with the blood of another. Otherwise, he would have had to suffer many times since the foundation of the world. But now he has appeared one time at the end of the ages for the removal of sin by the sacrifice of himself. 7:27 says, he doesn't need to offer sacrifices every day as high priests do, first for their own sins, then for those of the people. He did this once for all when he offered himself. 9:11 and 12 say, but the Messiah has appeared, high priest of the good things that have come, in the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is, not of this creation. He entered into the most holy place for all, not by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood, having obtained eternal redemption. And then in chapter 10, verses 11 and 12, every priest stands day after day, ministering and offering the same sacrifices time after time, which can never take away sins. But this man, after offering one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down at the right hand of God. If you'd have been able to go into the tabernacle or go into the temple, you would have recognized an astonishing lack of seating arrangements. It was a place of work. And there were no chairs. There was no break area, because the work was never done, because people keep sinning and the blood of bulls and goats can never take away sin. But our high priest, upon living the perfect life that made him the spotless lamb and then offering his own life as that sacrifice, sat down because the work was completed. There did not need to be any more sacrifices. This one took care of everything. The work was done. And Hebrews 10:14 says, for by one offering, he has perfected forever those who are sanctified. Our confidence this morning comes in the fact that our high priest has accomplished the work that you cannot do. He was obedient where we can't be. He paid the penalty for sin that would have destroyed us. The encouragement here in looking at this sacrifice of Christ this morning is not to say, look at how good Christ did in the face of adversity, now try to go be like that. Now, the encouragement this morning is, look at how Christ persevered in the face of adversity and recognize that His perseverance is your perseverance. I'm very thankful for Paul Tripp. A lot of you, I'm sure, are familiar with him. He has a gift to be very concise and pointed with what he says. So I'm going to let him say it instead of me because I don't think this is my gift. But Paul Tripp says, "Let me state it plainly. Your hope is not to be found in your willingness and ability to endure, but in God's unshakable, enduring commitment to never turn from His work of grace. Your hope is that you've been welcomed into commitment with one who will endure no matter what. You see, perfect endurance demands just that, perfection. And since none of us is there yet, we must look outside of ourselves for hope. Your hope of enduring is not to be found in your character or in your strength, but in your Lord's character and strength. Because He will ever be faithful, you can bank on the fact that He will give you what you need to be faithful to." Our high priest has already accomplished the perfect life and the sacrificial death, the shedding of blood for the forgiveness of sins that we could not. But though our high priest sat down upon accomplishing this work, he is not sitting down and doing nothing. He is working today actively on our account. He has already offered the perfect sacrifice at one point in time. But today, He serves as our perfect advocate, the perfect go-between between us and God. I listened to a lot of podcasts throughout the course of a week, and I was listening to an interview this week where they were asking a fairly well-known public figure if he prayed. And he said that he did, and they asked him, "Well, who do you pray to? Do you believe in God?" And he says, "Yeah, I believe in God," but when pressed on it, he said, "You know what, I don't think there's any way that if there is a God, we would be able to understand Him." And it makes even less sense that if there is a God out there, that He would have any idea what it is to be human. So I think there might be a God out there, but we really can't know what He's like, and He certainly can't understand what it is like. And so when he asks, he's like, "So why do you pray?" And he's kind of like, "Well, you know, just sort of." And he's right. It's ridiculous to think that the Creator of the universe, the all-knowing, all-powerful, holder of everything, would have any idea what it was like to walk on earth, except for the fact that that's exactly what Scripture tells us that He did. You know, in verse 14, we read that we don't have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with us. He is not far removed. He sympathizes with our weaknesses. He has been tested in every way, yet without sin. A couple of chapters back, at the end of chapter 2, you see a remarkably similar statement. Verse 16 starts like this. He says, "Therefore, He had to be like His brothers in every way," talking of the Son of God, "so that He could become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For since He Himself was tested and has suffered, He is able to help those who are tested." It was not just the job of the high priest to offer sacrifices on behalf of the people. That was only part of it. The other part of the priest's job was to deal gently with foolish people who are burdened with weakness. An earthly priest, all of the priests through the Levitical system in Aaron's lineage, would have understood what it is to be a weak and struggling human. That would give them a measure of grace when they would be able to bring the people's plights before God. But the very best of human high priests did not understand what it was to be God. Our high priest, Jesus Christ, understands completely what it is to be God and understands completely what it is to be man. He understands both sides of those equations in a way that no other high priest ever has. You know, it reminds me of that great cinematic masterpiece, The Emperor's New Groove. You should also watch that this week. But The Emperor's New Groove, it's toward the beginning of the movie, and there's this scene where you come into the back of the throne room, and it's this massive, sprawling throne room, and up on the throne you see the Emperor's advisor, Yzma, listening to the plight of the peasant down at the very bottom of several stories of steps. And as you get closer, you can begin to hear the very tail ends of the conversation, and you hear Yzma say, "It is no concern of mine whether or not you have..." What was it again? And the peasant goes, "Food?" And she goes, "Well, you really should have thought of that before you became peasants," and sends him out of the room. You know, it's a funny scene, but I think that we are all too often tempted to think that's what we are like when we come before God. We have these tiny little requests in our own eyes sometimes. We come before God and we say, "God, I just need food." And we're worried that this all-powerful, all-knowing, creative force who is the Almighty God is going to look and say, "What are you even talking about? You see everything that I have going on? I have far bigger concerns than you." But because we have a high priest who has walked in the very same steps that you have walked, that is not how God sees you. That is not how God treats your request. And that means that there's nothing in this life that you have experienced, that you are experiencing now, or that you will experience, that if you bring it before God, He's just going to say, "I really don't know what you're talking about." God knows, because Jesus has sat where you sat, and He walked where you walked, and He felt the pain of a broken world just as much as you did. You know, I told this story to a few people before, but this is about a year ago on the job site. I worked with and for Mark over at Ferguson Builders, and he was very kind to show me a lot of the ropes of the job there. And so about a year ago, I remember being out on site, and it was just me and one other guy, and I'd been kind of set with this task to handle on my own. Figure this out. You can do it. It'll be great. And I realized after a little while, I couldn't do it. It wasn't going to be great. It was going very poorly. And I was frustrated. And I'm kind of sitting there, and I'm sure you've had these. You have those frustrating days. You have those frustrating moments of work, and you're just kind of like, "Okay, God, I just need some help. Like, I'm not really expecting you to come down here and fix this, although if that's an option, I'm okay with that one. But God, I'm just frustrated with this right now, and I don't know what to do. Help." And I realized in that moment, oh, you know what? I have a high priest who understands what it's like to deal with difficult things. But then I had this other recognition, this realization that Jesus was a carpenter for decades. Aside from, and you cannot truly remove the deity of God from the humanity of God, but Jesus, in just His carpenter self, probably could have showed up and given me some pointers on what I was doing wrong. And I got it figured out, Mark. Don't worry, it's all taken care of. But even that recognition that Jesus understands so much because he was truly human and walked through this life as we walked means he relates so intimately with whatever it is we're going through. Maybe the thing that's made this past year so difficult is you've experienced the loss of a loved one. Jesus wept when he appeared at Lazarus's grave. Even though Jesus knew he was going to bring Lazarus back from the dead not long after, Jesus has felt the pain of death to someone close to him. Maybe the thing you're struggling with is a broken relationship, someone you have cared for who has hurt you. Jesus was called crazy by his own brothers and sisters and mother for preaching too strongly. Jesus was betrayed by one of his own disciples. Jesus knows what it is to feel the pain of a broken relationship. Maybe your struggle this morning is some sort of physical ailment, some pain, some sickness. Jesus surely had to deal with these fallen elements of the world. He saw it all around him. And Jesus also endured a pain that we cannot even fathom on the cross. He understands what it is to hurt. Maybe your struggle this morning is you're rolling into another year and you're still single. Jesus understands the difficulties that can come with that. Jesus lived his entire life that way. Now, boys and girls, maybe you have a really annoying brother or sister. Or maybe your brother or sister has a really annoying brother or sister. Do you know that Jesus actually knows what it's like to have a brother who's pestering you? You know, you can sit there and be like, it is so hard to love my brother. He's so annoying. I bet James was really annoying sometimes. Jesus knows. And maybe you're here this morning and thinking, the thing that is making life so difficult, the thing that is making life so painful, is I just feel the weight of sin. I feel like temptation is always there, just pressing in from around the corners. I always feel like I'm either always giving in or just moments away from giving in, and I'm tired and I'm beaten down. Jesus endured all of the things that we go through in this life, but he did it without sin. But that does not mean he was without feeling the weight of sin. He felt the temptation actually in a way that would even be more intense than the way that we feel the temptation of sin, because we at times cave, whereas he never did. Just like your body can only handle certain amounts of pain before it taps out. You know, we can only handle so much pain before we go into shock, we black out. We don't very often endure the full measure of pain. But Christ dealt with the full measure of every temptation by withstanding it until its end. You know, in the Garden of Gethsemane, we read that Jesus was sweating, as it were, great drops of blood. And that was because he was looking at how difficult and painful it was going to be to obey. He understands. Looking at something that you go, boy, this looks right, but I don't know if I want to do this. And then actually, he understands and feels the weight of sin in a far more real and powerful way than you ever will, because he carried the eternal weight of it on his shoulders on the cross. So whatever it is that you're struggling with this morning, whatever it is that makes life hurt, whatever it is that makes it difficult to want to keep going, The one we pray to knows where you're at, understands what you're feeling. He relates to you in your hurt. And we see in Hebrews 7 that he does all of this eternally. There is no longer a long line of priests. There's one priest. Because he cannot die, he holds this priesthood eternally for us. So what should our response be to this priest this morning? Well, we read it in verse 16, Hebrews 4:16, where he says, "Therefore, because of all of this, because of everything we know to be true about our priest, because of everything he's done on our behalf once in time and everything he's doing on our behalf now today, let us approach the throne of grace with boldness, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us at the proper time." We now have the ability to come confidently before God. That is unique to the history of Israel. You know, we've already read, but the Holy of Holies, the very presence of God, was a very guarded place. And you were only allowed access through very specific means, and even then it wasn't a sure thing. We read this, we actually read some of these verses in our verses of after our time of confession, our assurance of pardon, our assurance of salvation, but it actually talks about how it used to be such a terrifying thing to approach God. You think of the nation of Israel around Mount Sinai, and God said, "Don't touch the mountain," because God was residing at the top, and we could not get that close to him. You know, I think, as I think about being able to approach the throne in this way, I think of the story of Esther. And there are multiple times throughout the story of Esther where someone desperately needs an audience with the king, but they have not been called, and there's always that bit of fear. Because they had to walk into the throne room, and they would only be accepted if he chose to extend that scepter out to them. And it was always in the back of their minds, "I think this might be okay." But there is no confidence going into a throne room like that. But because of the once for all perfect sacrificial work, and because of the consistent day to day, hour by hour, minute by minute, second by second advocacy and intercession by Jesus Christ on our behalf, God is already permanently and eternally predisposed towards loving you and accepting you because the work of our high priest. We don't have to grovel. We don't have to work up an appropriate amount of guilt before we can approach God. We don't have to work our way back to a decided level of holiness before we can approach this throne of grace. Jesus has already cleared the way and has guaranteed that the Father loves you and is ready and willing to hear you. Maybe you're here this morning and you don't know this high priest. You don't know this Christ. Let me encourage you, today is the day. He has done all the work that you cannot do to bring you before a holy God. And believer, maybe you're here this morning and you relate to the struggle and you go, "I am battling right now. Life hurts right now." Be assured that Jesus understands what you're going through. And be assured that he has persevered in your place when you feel like you cannot. He has done the work. He is faithful. And maybe you're here this morning and you think, well, I don't feel that pain right now. I don't feel that weight right now. I'm doing well. Then let us encourage the brothers and sisters around us of this truth. Because there will be a time when we are going to need that encouragement from them. We live in a broken and fallen world, and we need to be reminded of our hope, Jesus Christ. This Christian life that we walk, this race that we run, to use the Hebrews 12 analogy, is not a solo effort. We are all in this together. So let me encourage you as we close from Hebrews chapter 10, verses 19 through 25. And I'll read this and then we'll pray. And this is, the book of Hebrews really is one huge, beautiful, overarching argument for Christ as superior to anything and everything else. And after 10 chapters of this plea, of this argument, we read this. Therefore, brothers, since we have boldness to enter the sanctuary through the blood of Christ, by a new and living way, he has opened up for us through the curtain, that is, in his flesh. And since we have a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a full heart, a true heart, in full assurance of faith, our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience, and our bodies washed in pure water. Let us hold on to the confession of our hope without wavering, because he who promised is faithful. And let us be concerned about one another in order to promote love and good works, not staying away from our worship meetings as some habitually do, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near.